Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Mac Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital here tonight with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society. How are you doing?
Oh, I was just going to say, how are you doing?
I'm good.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Okay, you know, I know you have two daughters.
Yes.
But somehow I like only talk about Carly. She's just like such an adventure
queen. Oh my gosh, yes. We were in Central Oregon a couple weeks ago and she went kayaking.
I saw pictures with a friend. And I mean, I get she's probably a good swimmer already.
She's a very good swimmer.
And she's got a life vest on. Mm-hmm. But it's still kind of freaky to see a very young child in it. and I'm sure because you or your husband were taking pictures that you were very close by, but it's still just, here's this beautiful, pristine lake, and here's this little girl in a kayak.
A big old kayak.
By herself.
Which was a children's kayak, and she just navigates it really well. The other thing, though, is the lakes this time of year, they're shallow.
Oh.
So I should have taken a picture, but she didn't want to get out. She could have gotten out and it was
just
knee deep.
Oh, it didn't look that way.
Yeah, no, it looked gorgeous. But she's so little and light too. She just floats right on the top.
Yes, I'm a little freaked out by that.
Yeah.
So, but I just think, you know, when she's like 70, those pictures, they're going to be like, wow, your grandma, what an adventuresome young kid you were.
It's an interesting hobby that she really picked up. A friend of mine got her into it, and then we got her her own kayak, and she just loves it.
See, I like canoes more than kayaks.
Oh, I don't know. Those are a little more tippy.
Yes, they are. But and I know every kayak person in the world is going to tell me I'm totally ignorant, and I understand that I am on this subject. There's just something about being like tucked into it
that
I don't like.
Oh, interesting.
And I know that if I was in a kayak and tucked in and I rolled it, that either I'm just going to come right back up or I can easily get out of it, that I'm not going to be stuck upside down and drown. But there's just something psychological to me about the being tucked in.
Yeah.
I like the openness of a canoe.
Well, in her kayak, she sits on top.
Yes.
So they're different.
Yes,
a little
I did
different.
See that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So she can take you sometime if you're ever interested in learning.
Well, actually, I have to give a shout out to, and I don't know if they're still doing it with, you know, the COVID and everything, but Lewis and Clark National Historical Park for Clatsop, their little kayak and canoeing experience. I've been on that, and it's very well done.
I thought they still did them this summer, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Good.
Should we get right to the big show?
Right to it.
All right. So these are the history highlights, the things that happen tomorrow. So you can go, and we're in October. Oh my goodness. Happy October.
Rolled right in.
Rolled right in like a canoe or a kayak. So anyway. Oh, I'm kind of loopy.
Oh, we crack ourselves up.
I'm loopy tonight. I can just tell already. So these are things tomorrow.
Yep.
So feel smart around the water cooler or the coffee mug or
the Zoom meeting.
The Zoom meeting or lunch or whatever. October 4th, 1648. Peter Stuyvesant. Stuyvesant. I don't know how to say his name. It's got a Y and a V right next to each other.
Cool.
Establishes America's first volunteer fire service.
Oh, I like that.
And especially here, we like fire protection. So.
We do. Let's talk more about that in a minute.
We will.
Okay.
Good idea. 1675, Dutch mathematician Christian Huygens patents the pocket watch.
Oh, interesting.
I wish pocket watches would come back.
Of course you do. You go right on that one.
I like the little chain. Yeah. I don't know. There's just something very railroad conductor-ish
about
it.
That and the pen protector, right? Or the pocket protector?
No, I don't need those. And I shove pens into my shirt pocket all the time.
So you do need them.
I probably should have it, but I don't like them. 1881, there's all kinds of wacky names today. 1881, Edward Laveau patents the automatic player piano.
Oh, that's fun.
I don't know how I feel about player pianos.
Yeah. They're portable.
1927, work begins on Mount Rushmore.
Oh, I saw that one.
I've never been.
Yeah.
Have you?
No, I haven't. Oh. I'm interested in that though. Who first thought of carving the faces of old white men into a mountainside was a good idea?
Well, it does look cool.
It does. I mean, but it's massive.
And they're good choices in terms of, I mean, if you're going to pick presidents.
Curious as to who first thought, this is a project
those
we can
four
take
would,
on.
Those four would be in my top 10.
Of course.
So those are good choices. But anyway, 1933, Esquire magazine is first published.
Oh, here we go.
1955, the Brooklyn Dodgers win their first World Series over the Yankees. 1957, okay, it's pop culture, but it has nothing to do with Oregon. But it's pop culture that I like. 1957, Leave It to Beaver debuts on CBS.
Oh, that's a good one.
Golly, Wally, what should we do? I always loved Eddie Haskell.
The friend.
The rascally right? friend of yeah. Wally, the older brother.
Okay. So,
but our history highlight of the day, and no surprise since loyal listeners know that I love the space stuff. 1957 also, 1957, Sputnik is launched. It's the Russian word for satellite. Sputnik had a diameter of 22 inches and weighed 184 pounds and circled Earth once every hour and 36 minutes, traveling at 18,000 miles an hour. Its furthest point of its distance from the Earth was 584 miles, and it was, scarily enough, it was visible with binoculars.
Oh.
Which is why Americans were so shocked that the Russians had beat us to space.
Yeah, interesting.
So, but it did deteriorate, and it eventually plummeted to oh. Earth.
Okay.
But not Sputnik, space, the no. beep, beep, oh. beep, beep, that everybody could hear. And so, you know, it kicks off for space.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Space didn't exist before that.
Right, yes. 1905, though, just one, Orville Wright pilots the first flight longer than 30 minutes.
Wow.
Can you guess how much longer?
More than 30 minutes or 30 seconds?
It was more than 30. It was the first flight longer than 30 minutes.
30 minutes. Wow. Was there a stewardess on board?
It was 33 minutes, wow. 17 seconds.
That's amazing.
And covered 21 miles.
Good for him.
Yeah. So it's kind of
interesting. I like the Wright brothers, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. But we mentioned the first America's first volunteer fire service.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the sad things about COVID, I mean, we've lost so many things. I mean, obviously, human life. But there's also been a lot of cultural events and activities. I mean, we haven't had Thanksgivings together, July 4th events, and right. family get-togethers. But there's been a lot of cultural things that have missed. And last year was actually the 150th anniversary birthday of the Astoria Fire Department.
Oh, how fun.
And
they didn't have a party.
They couldn't do anything. Yeah. I mean, they wanted to, and they minted actually little coins, I think, and there were some other things. And they had planned on some activities. In fact, I was supposed to be a speaker, and I said, don't know that I'm the best speaker, but I could learn about stuff
right.
in time, and then I didn't have to.
Oh.
So we thought we'd talk a little bit about some of the fire department and fire history of Astoria today.
Okay.
So before its paid fire department was established in 1897, Astoria, that's the paid, before people start doing math and say, wait, 1897, that's not 150 years. Astoria had three volunteer fire departments, all of which were equipped with steam pumpers that had to be operated by strong-armed men. And I should also say this comes from a few different sources. A Comtux article, a whole Comtux issue, actually, the quarterly historical journal of the Clatsop County Historical Society, and a 1905 publication about the history of the fire department. So some of the language is 1905-ish.
Okay.
So had to be operated by strong-armed men. There was a hook and ladder company attached to one of the companies and a number of those of host teams, which competed in musters in Oregon and Washington. The substantial amount of prize money they won was used to buy equipment and pay the expenses of the company. I had no idea those musters, there's like big prize money involved.
Astoria's first permanent organization for fire protection was brought about through the efforts of Charles S. Wright, S. N. Argonne, I. W. Case, A. Van Dusen, and Charles Binder. These gentlemen, after discussing the urgent need of protection from the ravages of the fiery demon, issued a call for a meeting of citizens to be held in the Masonic Hall on Friday evening, August 12, 1870. A large and enthusiastic number of citizens responded. Committees were assigned, the City Common Council was notified of the intent to start a fire company, and a group was assigned to search for equipment. The next meeting, August 20th, the first volunteer fire company was formed as the Astor No. 1, later changed to Astoria Fire Company No. 1. A who's who of Astoria signed the roll: Sale, Megler, Case, Adair, Twilight, D.K. Warren, Gray, John Welch.
It's a pretty long list. There are about 30 names on it. Yeah. And those were just the ones that really jumped out at me.
Stood
that I thought
out.
People will recognize some of those names.
For sure.
On September 5th, the Committee on Uniforms reported that they had selected black pants, red shirt with wide collar.
Good choice.
Buttoned over on the left side, black belt 3 inches wide and glazed. The committee was discharged and their selection adopted after a motion was carried to have the name of the company stamped on the belts in gilt letters. They're kind of snazzy
looking.
Fancy. At this meeting, considerable feeling was engendered and much discussion, not all of it being of a mild brand, indulged in, owing to the motion that a committee of three be appointed to go to Portland to receive and escort the newly purchased engine to its home. It seems that a large number of the members desired the honor of appointment on this committee, and after a final motion had been made and lost, that the entire company act as escort, the meeting adjourned.
Ooh.
I kind of like, though, that why didn't they all go? That's all right. I don't mind that.
Yeah, it's strange. On Monday evening, November 7th, 1870, the company was called together by a vigorous ringing of the bell for the purpose of taking the engine from the steamer Okanagan. The whole company responded, and the engine was with great care taken from the boat and hauled amid the cheering of the citizens to Captain Flavelle's warehouse, where it was temporarily housed.
Okay, so the whole town turns out. And this next section is a direct quote from the 1905 publication. I just want to make sure everybody knows that.
So this part is from that part, 1905 publication, that no accident shall befall the engine. A committee of five were appointed to examine all sidewalks and report their condition to the foreman so that a route could be selected for the proposed parade on the afternoon of December 26th. On this day, the entire company, headed by the Astoria Brass Band, turned out resplendent in their new uniforms and drawing their engine, proceeded through the principal streets, where they were greeted with vociferous cheers by the citizens, especially the ladies, who, had the city of Astoria been theirs to give, would gladly have laid it at the feet of this handsome body of men, for it must be admitted that nothing appeals to the sentimental female taste like a handsome man in uniform. I see why you had me read that. Yes. Now.
That's glorious and horrible at the great. Same time. That's why I wanted to make sure people understood. That was 1905.
That was not Mac.
Somebody wrote that of course the ladies love a handsome man in uniform.
I do enjoy the extra detail in those
they're
older
very
articles.
Flowery. They're very flowery writing. So the company eventually built a headquarters and hose house at 7th and Commercial Streets, which they shared with the Common City Council, an arrangement which generated considerable controversy. After several attempts by the fire company to oust the council and by the council to buy out the volunteers, a truce of sorts was achieved in September 1876, and the Astoria Fire Company turned their engine over to the council. I love that this building isn't big enough for the two of us.
Yeah. Meanwhile, a second volunteer company, Rescue Company Number 2, had been organized in July of 1877 with headquarters at 11th and Commercial. And a Silsby steam engine, second class, purchased for $5,000 after it took a prize at the Philadelphia Centennial Exposition of 1876. Both volunteer companies wanted the engine, and the matter was settled by tossing of a silver half dollar. The Alert Hook and Ladder Company, attached to the Astoria Fire Company Number 1, was organized on July 5th, 1877. Only sparse record of its activities have been preserved. The last engine company to organize was the Columbia Engine Company Number 3, formed in September 1890. It had 77 volunteers and a Clapp and Jones steam pumper, bought for it by the city for $4,000.
Some of the volunteer companies, it's kind of a lot of people. I'm kind of amazed by that. Some of the volunteer companies continued to meet after the paid Astoria Fire Department was created and were able to render assistance in some emergency situations. The Astoria Fire Department was created by the City Council in 1897. That's the paid one. And C.H. Stockton, who had previously headed one of the volunteer companies, was named chief. The department consisted of 15 paid men, the chief, four drivers, and 11 extra or call men. Its equipment consisted of one Champion chemical wagon with twin 60-gallon tanks, two hose wagons, two hose reels with 5,000 feet of hose, six horses.
Whoa.
That doesn't seem like it's enough. Its reserve equipment included one Silsby steam engine third class, one Amoskeag steam engine second class, and a 155-foot Hayes patent third class ladder truck. And we'll talk about that a little bit in just a minute or so. Half a century later, in 1950, the Astoria Fire Department, headed by Chief Wayne Osterby, consisted of 19 paid men and two sleepers working a newly instituted 72-hour week.
Wow, that's quite a week. A short history of the Astoria Fire Department published in 1950 lists the mean fires from a fireman's viewpoint for which records were then available. July 2nd, 1883, Clatsop Mill. March 23rd, 1885, Sash and Door Factory and Western Hotel. November 20th, 1887, the Steamer Telephone. August 11th, 1892, Rose Opera House. September 20th, 1893, Clatsop Mill again.
The pesky Clatsop Mill.
It's coming back. May 13, 1894, West Coast Cannery. June 1894, Kinney Cannery. February 15, 1901, can you guess?
Clatsop Mill again.
1921, Hammond Mill. In 1922, the Great Astoria Fire.
The 1922 Hammond Mill, that's the one where a lot of the Sikhs, the guys from India, worked.
Okay.
And one of the reasons when it burned down, they lost their jobs and they left. That's one of the reasons that they weren't here anymore.
Oh. On December 8th, 1922, at 2 a.m., a fire was reported burning behind a Beehive department store. It was later established that it had begun in the basement of Teal Brothers Restaurant and Billiard Parlor on Commercial Street between 11th and 12th Streets, a wood frame building. The wooden viaduct below Commercial Street became a tunnel of flame, enabling the fire to spread to buildings south and west within half an hour. By 6 a.m., 32 square blocks of downtown Astoria were burning. Several buildings were dynamited to create a fire break, and the fire was eventually stopped at 8th Street at about 1:30 in the afternoon.
Okay, that fire break, I've got a great story about this because, you know, one of the buildings that survived that was supposed to be dynamited and destroyed was the Lovell Auto Building, which is now today Fort George Brewery. And the reason it survived, I interviewed Bob Lovell and his brother about a year or two before Bob passed away. And he talked about his father, Sherman Lovell, the guy. He had ordered fire extinguishers, and he thought he was getting a dozen. And like a day before this fire, instead of a dozen, they sent a dozen cases.
Oh.
So he had like 150 fire extinguishers. So as soon as the fire started, all of his sales guys came down to the shop. And they weren't sure if they'd be pushing cars out of the way, what they would be doing. And he sent a whole bunch of guys with these fire extinguishers up to the roof. So every single spark that hit the building, they immediately hit with their fire extinguishers. And apparently when the whatever group was going around trying to dynamite this wall of buildings around the fire to contain it, when they got to his place, he had a shotgun and he said, not my building. My building's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And because he had the shotgun is the only reason that they didn't dynamite his building. They kind of left. And
apparently,
I think, I may be misremembering this, the exact details, but there was a building next door that they did dynamite. And the force of that explosion knocked out some of Lovell's windows. But other than that, there was no damage to his building.
Oh, my goodness. Well, only two people did lose their lives, a car dealer who suffered a heart attack while pushing a car out of danger, and a logger who hung himself under the docks during the fire. But virtually the whole of Astoria's business district had been wiped out and 2,500 people left homeless. Property damage was estimated at $12 million. Approximately $2.7 million was paid on insurance policies.
Well, that doesn't quite add up.
No.
And that's one of the reasons the 22 fire is one that everybody remembers so much. And why our downtown in Astoria looks the way it does, because it was all rebuilt kind of at the same time. 1922, we're coming up on the 100th anniversary of this fire. So we are doing at the Historical Society an exhibit, a temporary exhibit upstairs in the Heritage Museum about the fire and some other things tying to fire protection. So if you do have any specific artifacts, like something that was supposedly melted or survived the fire, please let us know.
Okay. And when's that coming out next?
Sometime in the next, we're still kind of trying to figure out how much we have and what that exhibit's going to look like, but, we'll probably be working on it in December and open it in January or so.
Perfect. So, great.
So the other thing that I was going to point out, I always kind of gloss over, we talk about the property damage and all the businesses and how much difference the insurance was versus how much damage. And a lot of people didn't have any income anymore to pay their mortgage. We forget that 2,500 people left homeless.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we just think downtown businesses, not so many people living there, but 2,500 people had no home after this.
And really, I mean, we're not a metropolitan area even now, right? So where did they go? Where did they leave?
Don't know.
Yeah. The Stutz Pumper, now on exhibit in the Fire Museum, was used to draw water from the river to pour on the fire and worked for a full week afterwards, damping down the smoldering embers. It pumped water from the river for another month to augment the city's water supply.
So my favorite item in the Uppertown Firefighters Museum, which we know isn't open all the time, we rely on some very dedicated volunteers, and we have it open during the summer. But my favorite item there is the horse-drawn 1876 hook and ladder truck made by the American LaFrance Company in Elmira, New York. It carried three types of ladders. The 55-foot extension ladder that was carried on the top level was raised by hand-operated worm gear. Former Chief Arnie Rowdio remembers that when he worked for the fire department before he became chief, one of the requirements of anyone who wanted to join the department was to climb the 50-foot ladder extended vertically, go over the top, and come down the other side, a feat that required not only courage and strength, but considerable agility. I think maybe your daughter could do that.
Yeah. Do you think they drew straws?
Yeah. The last time the extension ladder and perhaps the truck itself was probably used was during the fire that destroyed the Louvre building on September 22nd, 1939. That's kind of where the McDonald's is today.
Okay.
Rowdio and George Dobie Backlund had ascended to the roof via one of the fire escapes and were pouring water into a hole that had burned through the roof when the outer walls suddenly caught fire. The fire escapes were engulfed in flames. And unless the two firefighters could find another way to descend, they were in imminent danger. They were considering jumping 30 feet to the roof of an adjoining building when Chief Foster ordered the 55-foot ladder extended, and they were able to descend in relative safety.
Yeah, I don't think that math was going to work very well for them.
No, not at all.
30 feet.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, again, unfortunate that we're doing this when the Fire Museum isn't open and listeners can't plan this weekend or this week to go visit. But we are trying to find more information about the 22 fire. Yeah. And you know, everyone seems to have the panoramics of the destruction, and it looks like a bomb went off. It looks like something out of World War II. So don't call us about those, because we kind of already have tons of photographs. But if you do have any artifacts, or if there's any personal memories that you have, a family journal or something that grandma wrote about the experience, we've got some of those, but we'd love to have just more stories. And we do want to pull the lens back a little bit. It's not just going to be the 22 fire, but as the 100th anniversary, that's obviously the focus and why we're doing the exhibit.
Maybe we could have someone on our show.
We probably will.
That would be
a little precursor. We might have fire as a theme over the next year, probably like five or six times.
You say this while we're amid a pandemic.
Yes.
You just say that lightly. That fire is a theme. Be careful what you wish for.
Well, you know, as long as we don't reenact it.
Correct.
You know, we're not going to celebrate with a big bonfire or anything.
Our buildings have improved as we sit right next to a, you know, a fire door on the second floor.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, we're in our secret undisclosed location. There's a fire escape door right next to us, and we were both remarking when we started the show that it's a new door. It was kind of freaking us out because it's all clean and nice.
Yeah,
but shall we take a little break?
That sounds good. We'll be right back.
October 1895. At the new style chop house tomorrow, roast chicken with cranberry sauce, macaroni and cheese, and a small bottle of beer, only 30¢. Fresh Eastern oysters on the half shell.
And welcome back to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quilo with Providence Seaside Hospital. Here again, Mac Burns, Clatsop County Historical Society. We're talking fire.
So, but now we'll talk, since we got time, we'll do a little This Week in Local History.
Yes.
So why don't you take it off?
Tick, tick, tick. October 3rd, 1928, dead man towed to Astoria by fish boat. The body of an unidentified man was yielded up this morning by the Columbia River and today is in charge of E.B. Hughes, Clatsop County coroner, in case anyone can identify it. The body was seen floating in the river off the foot of 4th Street by Albert T. Anderson. The C.H. Foster, Ilwaco trolling boat, took the corpse in tow and brought it to the foot of 1st Street, where it was transferred to Hughes Mortuary. The man was dressed in dark cotton trousers and striped blue shirt with high-top shoes. The man was 5'8", heavily built, and apparently of middle age. The body appears to have been in the water for about 3 weeks. Effects found on the body include a large jackknife with a horn handle half broken off, and 40 cents in cash. A black bill folder was also found, but was empty.
It's kind of amazing how many fishermen just
pull up bodies
or just found. Yeah.
Oh,
back then. I mean, I hope it doesn't happen a lot now. Jeez. But Lisa Penner, the longtime archivist at the Historical Society here, wrote a whole book about basically just the drowning deaths.
Oh.
Yeah, it's kind of depressing and kind of gross.
Sure.
So October 4th, 1918, the trial of Matt Armstrong on an indictment charging him with buying and receiving stolen property is being held before a jury in the circuit court this afternoon. The defendant is accused of purchasing two automobile tires that had been stolen from cars at Seaside. 1918.
Yeah. Also, October 4th, 1918, powdered sugar will be taboo to domestic consumers October 10th, according to an order issued to all wholesale and retail dealers by the Distribution Division of the Food Administration. Stocks then on hand may be disposed of if purchased in good faith for only commercial manufacturing purposes and for commercial baking.
October 4th, 1944, Vern Ryerson, county sanitarian. Do we still have a county sanitarian?
I don't think so.
I like
public health department.
Today asked all historians to check their residences for presence of rats and to call the health office for rat control work if it is needed. Now that fall is here, rats will tend to move into houses and buildings for shelter, he warned. I wonder if they still offer that service.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of want to say, if you have rats, call the county health, but I don't want to put them in that position.
Yeah, I think they're a little busy right now. October 4th, 1963, President Kennedy flew into Tongue Point Station today in a glittering green jet-powered Marine Corps helicopter for a 33-minute visit. The president brought surprise news that the naval station will be reactivated for at least partial use early next year, and the proposed Coast Guard helicopter base for the Columbia River will be established at Tongue Point rather than at Clatsop Airport. How'd that work out?
Not so well.
Yeah.
Although we do have a base here.
We do.
Just not at Tongue Point.
Yeah.
So he's a liar.
Nice try. That's okay. 33 minutes.
I'm sure he was sincere that he planned on it and it just didn't work out. So
everyone needs an editor. Somebody gave him those notes.
October 6, 1918. A large number of local hunters are planning on going after ducks on next Sunday. The shooting period on that day will be from 5:46 in the morning until 5:42 in the evening. The limit under the present law is 25 birds of all kinds for a week, and not more than 8 of these can be geese. I'm amused at the times.
Yeah.
Why suppose so specific? 5:46 in the morning and 5:42 in the evening.
I don't know. On the subject of fire, October 8th, 1928, a new roof has been completed on the city's new fire station, which is being rebuilt from a former brewery. The interior of the old brewery has been torn out, the city manager's office reports, and the work is beginning now on building new floors and other interior work. It is expected the building will be ready by November 1st. It was 1928.
And that's the Upper Town Firefighters Museum today. I love that.
Yeah, it was a brewery.
It was originally a brewery. Yes.
That's great.
So October 7th, 1907, the tug of war interest has not abated in Astoria since the exciting contests were held during Regatta Week, as is evidenced by the exhibition announced for Saturday. The Swedes will pull against the Greeks, and the Upper Astoria Athletic Club will try its strength against a team made up of the employees of the North Pacific Brewing Company.
That's great.
This is what we did before the internet.
Yes. Always.
So do you want I like the last one. You want to read that one?
Go for it. October 9th, 1953. A 71-year-old retired longshoreman survived 27 hours of exposure to waters on the Columbia River after his car went off a bank on Highway 30, 7 miles east of Astoria. The man, August Cavisto, was thrown out of his car in the accident, and his body was stuck in the mud of the river's banks for 27 hours. River tides came up to his chin on several occasions.
It's like some mob thing or something. That's horrifying. Just picture the tide coming up and you're stuck in the mud and it's like up to your chin.
And probably hurt because you got thrown from a car.
Yeah.
Can't be great.
That whole image just horrifies me. And on that beautiful note,
yes.
Go make some history. And we will catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.